Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Well, hi, and welcome to another episode of Fork Tales. Today, we're joined by a friend of mine, a very visionary food entrepreneur who's redefining how Americans experience Indian cuisine. His name is Sameer Malhotra, and he's the CEO and co-founder of Cafe Spice, a nationally distributed brand known for its globally inspired ready-to-eat meals. Sameer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
So, I mean, the founding and the evolution. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the founding of the Cafe Spice concept.
So, I grew up in the family business and the restaurants. You know, like my parents were immigrants, came here, you know, like just started Indian restaurants in New York City and Westchester. And, you know, growing up, the family was all involved in the business. It's called Daawat, was the number one Indian restaurant in Manhattan in the 80s and 90s. Wow. And, you know, we all grew up working there. My sister was the hostess. I was the coat check. My mom was doing something. My dad was schmoozing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, growing up in the restaurant business, we saw that Indian food, my dad was really early with Indian food in the United States. And he saw like a gap in the market for like, there was either really formal or really super casual, right?
Right.
And so he found a little gap in the market in between. And that's when Cafe Spice, the restaurant company, started. And that was in 1998, opened by NYU. And it was like a bistro style Indian concept, mm-hmm. a lot of colors. Like we'd seen these type of things in the UK. I was at Babson College studying entrepreneurship, did a business plan on expanding the Cafe Spice restaurant group and using a commissary model to do it. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated college, joined the restaurant business, you know, came right into the family business. And we had a commissary that we opened that with that plan, like, you know, standardize the recipes. Getting chefs was the hardest sure. part when it came to Indian food. So, you know, standardize the recipes. We opened a restaurant in Philly. We opened a restaurant in New Jersey. We had Express Outlet in Grand Central, MIT. Like we'd gotten to about 8-9 restaurants at that point. Like the Express concept as well as mm-hmm. the bistro concept. And Whole Foods Market, just fast forward a little bit, 2002, decides they're going to open an Indian store, a supermarket in Columbus Circle.
Yeah, there. I remember when it opened, yep.
Yeah, it was in 2002 or 2003. And they put it in the newspaper. They had Lydia Bastianich coming to do the opening, the ribbon cutting, and then mm-hmm. they put in the newspaper that they're going to have Indian food out every day. My dad and I visited the store, and they weren't able to keep up with it. They're trying to make it from scratch, which yeah. we were like, hey, we have these restaurants, Cafe Spice restaurants, Daawat, the number one restaurant in the city. We have a commissary that could help you guys with this for the store.
Capacity, right.
Yeah, we have the capacity. We can make the Indian food. And that's where the entire business changed. The family business changed completely. It was we were making Whole Foods their food for that one store on their hot bar, and now fast forward to 20 years later, we make the Indian food for their hot bars in every store in the country. And
wow.
We're very proud of that. And
that's awesome.
We no longer have restaurants. Got out of the restaurant business, although mm-hmm. the name Cafe Spice stuck. But that's where I, with my father's support, took the business in a different direction where we started being a manufacturer of authentic Indian cuisine and other things, mm-hmm. which we'll get to later. But and then we launched the Cafe Spice CPG brand, which is yeah. Grab and Go Meals, which you referenced in your intro, also available nationally. So it's like in different supermarket chains. And so now Cafe Spice exists as – yes, an Indian food manufacturer. Yes, a CPG brand under Cafe Spice. But we also are a white label producer for product for supermarket chains and food service providers.
Are they doing like private label Indian food? I mean, is that what it is?
Yeah,
basically,
it's a private label. Yeah, so we do private label for a couple of chains too. Mm-hmm. And private label is growing. Sure. It's a lot of store brands. So we have the capability to use our recipes or work with people on their own recipes and replicate them and provide them. So four different aspects of building the company. We have our brand. We're still family owned. We have a great strategic investor, but the Geller Global Group, and who you know as well. So they're our friends, and they've been really great about growing the business together. And now that's where we're at.
Yeah, that's awesome. So back to the restaurant there very quickly. Yeah. You did like that. You said it's the commissary. So you had a hub and spoke model. Did that work with that? Because it was the location seemed like they were pretty far apart. Was that model working for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, right? I mean, we got into Philly. We got to Gettysburg, Maryland. We actually had a friend who opened a store in Gettysburg, Maryland. We were supplying them their products there too. We had our own trucks. Mm-hmm. The recipe standardization was working, but the cost model was not really working.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah,
because we weren't able to eliminate the labor in the stores. It was like doing extra, because people still at that point with Indian restaurants still wanted to see the tandoor. They still wanted to see like the food being made, like the open kitchen, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was hard to eliminate the labor part of it. We were able to do the consistency. And maybe we gave up too early, right? I mean, at the end of the day, because now you do see it. Like, you need to standardize. You need to standardize growth. That you and I were talking about a couple of weeks ago when we met about co-packing. Like, a lot of restaurant chains now are looking at us to standardize, but they look at standardizing things like grains, sauces. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We still need that little bit of element of action. Yeah. Our restaurants needed that element of action, so it didn't really work there. If we went all in, maybe we would have been able to figure it out, but I think taking my eye off the ball from the restaurant, because growing up in retail and wanting to do something different kind of put us in a different direction too. Mm-hmm. But I think if we really focused on it, it would have worked. But
yeah,
at that high end restaurant, it wasn't. That's why I said earlier the express outlets were a little different, because those you could do, right? You can do like a steam table. It's kind of like how a hot bar works at Whole Foods, right? It's just picking up like a buffet.
Yeah, and I love the background of the family, the ethnicity, you know, just bringing that stuff forth. Like my wife's family is Greek, and they all had restaurants. So the whole idea of growing up in a restaurant, literally, like the dishwasher's your babysitter, you know, you end up taking the trash. I mean, it's just a part of the family, right? And it's just a cool thing and you see this a lot of times where, you know, it evolves from that one restaurant to two, to an idea, to a successful company. I think it's just a phenomenal story. I think it's just a very admirable one, and it's neat to bring the culture forth. Yeah.
You laugh about it. Like, my wife laughs about it, because like, we're doing school pickup and this thing and that thing. And like, yeah, you're right. It's like the dishwasher's your babysitter. It's like, everybody was my uncle and aunt.
Was
like,
yeah, no, right. Was, that's right.
Somebody else is picking me up from school every day.
That's funny. And it's because it's true. It's just a way of life, and it's awesome. So like, let's talk about culture. What's the culture like at Cafe Spice? How did you create that culture, and how do you maintain it now?
So, you know, we've always been like gritty team, right? It's all like make it happen, right? It's always been like that, from the 6,000 square foot plant, which we started in, to the 35,000 square foot plant, which was our next one. And then now we're in a 70,000 square foot plant. So it's like, you know, everything's been proof of concept. Get it done. And, you know, yes, we've had mishaps, nature of of entrepreneurship, right? I mean, the nature of an entrepreneur, we make mistakes.
Sure.
But yeah, the grittiness of the team, and like the fact that my COO has been there for 17 years, my director of food safety has been there 17 years. It's like, you know, it really has been the culture. So culture is grittiness, and culture is safety. Mm-hmm. So I've referenced this a few times in some articles and stuff like that, but as restaurateurs, you're creating food that's going to be consumed within an hour, within a half an hour. Maybe they take it home and they eat it and put it in their fridge and eat it the next day. Here, we're making food that's going to be frozen. It's going to be, we do a lot of refrigerated fresh. Like, we're creating products that are going to consume later. So food safety was something as restaurateurs we didn't really know. So we built the entire team with that background in food safety, where from airline catering and things like that, where they know, like, you know, the food science is the most important part. We can come up with recipes. We have great chefs. We have, you know, the family still involved and things like that. But like our chef, Hari Nayak, is very involved. Culinary quality is there, right? So it's like quality, safety, and then like the grittiness to get it done. That's awesome. That really lies with the culture of Cafe Spice.
So that first six, I think you said 6,000 square foot, was that the commissary? Was that the hub in the hub
and
spoke?
That was the hub for the restaurants. Yeah, was the 6,000 square feet in Long Island City, Queens, right outside. Our main restaurants were in Manhattan. So that's how it started there. It was
how like, long were you able to
smelling like onions? It was like,
well, how long were you able to maintain that side? Like when you went into and talk about that meeting. Yeah. Apparently there was this, you didn't know your audience with the first meeting to Whole Foods. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I'm 22 years old, right? Going into, this is the first, like after we started supplying the one store, we want to start supplying more stores. They're building more stores in New York City. I walk into the Whole Foods Corp regional office in New Jersey, and I'm wearing a suit, right? I'm 23 years old. You think that's you think like back in the early 2000s, that's how you think you're supposed to dress to go to a meeting.
Sure.
Well, there, the person who came to greet me came out in cargo shorts and flip flops. And I'm like, all right, I felt like I'm completely out of place here.
And, actually, maybe he was out of place, but I get you. I mean, you know, the world's changed, right?
The world has changed, exactly. I mean, that's during the dot-com boom. Yeah. Everything, all that stuff was going on in that early 2000s. That's kind of the pendulum's come back a little bit too. But I was like completely out of place when I showed up to that meeting. And then I came back to my team and I'm like, you know, we don't need to get dressed up for us. You still see in the food business, you do see some, you know, some people still getting dressed up in the tie. But with the Whole Foods world in Austin, Texas, and that world, it wasn't a big part of it. Yeah, so
that's funny.
Now we're in polo shirts and
there you go. Yeah, everyone's casual. So I want to ask you a question on the culture thing, because this is like a little bit of I can empathize with the situation. I've been doing this for a long time. I started my first agency 33 years ago, and it was different. I mean, you talk about gritty. I mean, we were a startup. I mean, I had $300 to my name, started the company. And, you know, a couple, one employee, two employees, and just really had a really hustle to make it, right? And, you know, it was like a never say die attitude, whatever it took, right? Family business. I mean, I'm sure there's your grittiness, drive. And it's like, you know, Saturday and Sunday were just two more days in the week per se. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like, you know what I mean? The 9 to 5 and, oh, I don't do that. Those things didn't exist.
It still is. It's still a family business. You know, it's hard. It still is. You want to value people's time. You want to value people's, like, you know, on the weekends and things like that. But when it's crunch time, there's no weekends. Exactly.
Yeah. So you still deal. I mean, that's sort of what I was asking. I could picture not your family, I'll say, but the yelling and family stuff when things aren't going, you know, I could just, and then you turn that from a family to a significant corporation, right? There's that growth thing, that whole change and that shift. Was that difficult, or was it just always just a big family?
Well, I'll take it to another level, Michael. We lived in the same house too.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, now we don't anymore, but like when I got married, my wife moved in with my parents. Uh-huh. And it's an Indian cultural thing, right? I mean, like, you know, you take care of your parents as they take care of you. And for many years, especially during the growth stages, we were fully, you know, before I brought in the investor, we were fully family funded. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of battles between a generational battle between 30-year difference between me and my dad. We're best friends, but like, you know, like, but at the end of the day, when it comes to work or during the tough periods or during things, there were battles. And then those do trickle to the office too, as much as to the office and home, you know. So my dad didn't come to the office every day. I came home and I would give him an update. And when he'd come to the office, I'm sure if you ask some of our employees, they've seen battles, right? At the end of the day, between me and my dad, and at home for sure too.
Yeah.
Until like my son was born, and then we tried, like, that was about 12 years ago. And so then we tried to keep work out of home as much as possible.
That's always good to do, but it's really hard to do.
Right now, we, like you said, we've grown up to be over $50 million company. We've professionalized it with certain levels of layers of executive team and all that stuff. My father's still the chairman, still involved, still very involved in the financial side of things. Like, he helps with strategic buying, but he's not involved in the day-to-day business. I run the day-to-day business, and we have no other family members in the business. Other than my sisters have their own businesses, and my mom's not involved. She used to be involved in the restaurants back in the day, quality control. And my wife's no longer really involved. She helps. Yeah. She's a bounce board. But yeah, there was a stage where all of us were.
Yeah.
And
interesting holidays, right?
Yeah, interesting holidays, exactly.
All right, so I want to ask you, you alluded to it a little bit earlier, and I know you have chefs and great quality the whole way across, but bringing global flavors to a broad audience isn't easy. So when you're creating new dishes or any of the dishes, whenever you're making something, I imagine, you know, you have to hit this balance between authenticity to the culture and the food and, but wait a second, we want to sell lots of this. So how do we sort of, I don't want to say Americanize it, but maybe it is Americanize it. Like, how do you reach that balance? Can you talk a little bit about that?
We could go both ways with that, right? You could really spice it up. And again, generationally, nowadays, spice is much more accepted. But when we started the business, it wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. And people always have that mindset that Indian food is spicy. So we really, the education piece was really important to me.
Yeah.
We have a great culinary ambassador. His name is Chef Hari Nayak. He's run some of the greatest restaurants, and he's a consulting chef around the globe. Always doing something interesting. So he's got great ideas, but there's only so much. The world that we're looking at in the United States, national, Midwest, West Coast, you know, we need to go beyond the coasts. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to serve everybody. And, so we do have to, I guess, tailor down some of the spice levels.
Mm-hmm.
A big part of the education piece for me is demos, from the marketing end. I feel like if I had to identify a certain amount of funds towards marketing, a level of it will be demo. I need people to taste the food. They need to taste it and realize how good it is.
That's always the case.
So when we were, so rather than doing 50% off, dollar off promos, we look at, all right, let's focus on getting people to taste the food. It's mm-hmm. Costco strategy. We don't do much with Costco, but they also have that strategy to get people to taste the food. But for us, it's more like, I need them to taste it to see how flavorful this is. And in the early days, my wife would do a lot of the demos herself. And it was funny. It would be the kids who would come because they're walking around the supermarket with the parents, try the food, and they'd be like, oh, wow, we really like this. And that was a surprising part there where they're loving the food. They're telling mom and dad, pick up the chicken tikka masala or the saag paneer, right? Which are more popular items. And that's getting that generation into it because they're more adventurous eaters. In addition, I focus very heavily on marketing to the college market because, again, the mindset is different.
Younger, right? Yeah.
And if they're familiar with the Cafe Spice brand while they're in college, they can, they'll be, when they're young professionals or as they start a family, they'll be familiar with the brand when they get out. So a lot of focus has been spent on, let's get into the College C stores. Let's get Cafe Spice on campus. That's a big part of it.
Well, and you started right by the campuses, right? The very beginning of the restaurants, right? So that's smart. And
I joke about it that my business plan in college was to open a Cafe Spice in every college town. But I was able to bring capital costs quite a bit down when it came to that part by, let's just get our Cafe Spice meals in every
time. There you go. That's right.
Then we built this giant plant, which the capital costs went in a different direction altogether. But
Well, it's funny because we all know it's really hard to scale up. And food, typically any food brand, I've worked with lots and lots of food and beverage brands and know lots of manufacturers. And it typically starts out with, I made this sauce or my grandmother made this product or my uncle had this restaurant or our family did this and they scaled it. So, but it's really hard to scale up. Now, I'll say that it sounds like from day one, you always had an eye towards it. Even with the restaurants and the hub and spoke, you were looking at how do I scale? How do I create authenticity in large quantities? Is it hard to maintain that quality? You might see, a small batch home meal versus, your company. I mean, you're selling to all the Whole Foods.
Well, yeah. So the ideations of the plant, right? The 6,000 to the 35,000 to the 70,000, right? Batches got bigger. Quality is the most important. The one thing that's the amazing part of Indian food, what we have is that it could take a beating, right? You could cook it down, whether it sits on a buffet for it, just the flavors are still there. The flavors come out in there. It really works well for the large batch cooking, at least the curries do and the grains do and things mm-hmm. like that. So as and when we have gotten from smaller batches to larger batches, to keep the consistency has always been important. So two important parts of it. One is the spice room. All our plants have had a spice room where the spices and all the different elements of spices and where they are in the recipe are all weighed out by a completely different team than who's cooking. Where in a restaurant, it's the chef's making everything. It depends a little bit on his mood or his or her mood when they're cooking. If they've had a bad day, they might make it a little spicier. you never know, right? It's all that. So that element is out. In a spice room where everything is weighed, ground, all the whole spices mm-hmm. are ground, everything in a particular room, which every plant has had. And now the new one's pretty cool. If you want me to come visit sometime. But so this keeping that spice consistency is important. And then the cookers have been very important. So we spend a lot of time when we're deciding new cookers so that the flavors don't change. A lot mm-hmm. of tasting by the team, constant tasting by the quality control team and product development team as we are building new recipes.
It's
scaling up current recipes.
Yeah, it's obviously be a lot harder to scale your dish versus like McDonald's or, like any of these other brands. It's pretty straightforward stuff. I mean, not taking away from anybody, but it's got to be harder to create flavor profiles.
Spice room is important. That's the flavor, right? It might be lowest in the cost, but flavor-wise, it's the most important to keep its consistency.
So you test a lot of recipes and dishes. I'm sure as part of your R&D. Who in your family, who's got this final say? Is it you that has the final say? I want to picture a grandma somewhere that says, no, this isn't good.
My mom's very involved. Obviously, Chef Harry's involved, but my mom is not. At the end of the day, she doesn't like you joke the grandma thing. It's like she doesn't have a selfish bone in her body. It's all about wanting success for the family business. It's mm-hmm. not like she's thinking anything in general, right?
Right.
So she will clearly give you the feedback whether it's good or bad, right? And sometimes they have to like be like, but mom, like this or but mom and that, like, I joke about it. It was on a podcast last week. I said the same thing, but like my mom would have it. If she could, she'd have us squeezing lemons for all the rather than buying pre-made lemon juice. Right. And like it had to get to a stage. Okay. So we have to have this conversation, mom. We can't,
we have
to
just can't lemon. Do that. Yeah.
And so I joke about it like that. So yeah, she's involved, right? She tastes everything. Like I always send R&D samples home to her, try them after a week, freeze it, try it. Let's see what it tastes like. And she'll give her honest feedback. Not only to me, she'll give her honest feedback to the team. Like I said, a lot of our team members have been with us over 10, 15, some 20 years. So she treats them like kids. Like there is the family element still involved in our
business.
Cool.
Right? Like that's really cool.
We are all a family.
And I can see too, I'm sure you have like these chefs and they're professionals, but at the end of the day, what does mom think? It's gotta be like,
exactly.
That,
you know, it's very important.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. That's that'd be good marketing.
Son is becoming a foodie. So I think he'll take over that.
Yeah, there you taste go.
Part.
That's funny. So on a marketing side, like how do you market? We talked earlier about like, staying true to the culture and the flavors, but yet making it quote unquote as American for an American audience. I mean, we want to sell product here. So you want to make it, I'll say mainstream. So how do you do that balance? Like marketing wise, how do you market the Indian cuisine to American mainstream?
So like I mentioned earlier, demo is very important, right? We mm-hmm. want to get them to taste the food, get the food in the customer's mouth. Once they taste it, I know they're going to buy it, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm very confident about that. In addition is, India's last couple of years at least, or maybe 15 years ago, maybe since Slumdog Millionaire came out and things like that, India has been on the food map, right? If you look in New York, there's even beyond just when my dad did it, there was Indian restaurants. Now, there's no longer Indian restaurants. There's North Indian restaurants. There's South Indian restaurants. There's coastal Indian restaurants. Mm-hmm. So the marketing is just coming, just between India itself becoming more important. I mean, Diwali is a Indian New Year, and it's kids have it off from school now. So it's like the Indian culture is getting much more. So that's just happening naturally. Along with that, the cuisine is coming along with it. Yes, it's like we're not where Mexican food is or Chinese food is yet, but we're getting there with Indian food and more and more.
Yeah.
So natural marketing through trends, that's definitely there. And then on our own internal social media, that's how we try to focus. We are a B2B company as well as a B2C company, so I find LinkedIn very important from my end, as that from the B2B end, which is what I'm very focused on. The CPG brand itself is consumer facing, so Instagram is important. The colors are very important to me and us as a company. Is the colors just identify the flavors, the culture. But yeah, so social definitely from there too.
Yeah, that makes, that tracks. And you know, so what's the biggest misconception people have about Indian food? How do you address that?
It's funny, we've heard of it since we were kids, like in the restaurant business as well. Like, I don't eat curry. I don't eat curry. You know, there's a thing, I don't like curry. Curry is not a thing. Curry is like, it's a spice. It's a particular spice. Not all Indian food has curry in it.
Right.
And, and then there's that's the misconception. Everything's not curry, right? Curry is that yellow spice that you have. And then on top of that is the spiciness, which I talked about. And not all Indian food is spicy. It's like, you need to think about flavor. And it can be toned down on certain dishes. The vindaloo might be spicy, but the tikka masala won't be. It's like, you know, it's much more palatable. So those misconceptions we've had, like, you know, on our packaging, how many chili peppers is how spicy it is. Those things have been important. But yeah, that the biggest misconception is that you're going to have this curry and like the heartburn and stuff like that. That there are dishes that are like that. There are restaurants that are like that, but not everything.
Right. So how important is, like, in the packaging side of things, is the cultural storytelling, like letting people know about the Indian culture, anything like that? Like, are we trying to keep it as Americanized as possible in the store? We're walking up on shelf, I got to grab people's attention. Or do we want to have a little bit of the cultural flair to it, so people can say, oh, I want to try this? I mean, what's the balance there?
It's very balanced. We have the like I said, the colors. India is known for colors, things like that. That's all there. It's evident that when you go on, it's different, right? As you have those different, we have this flower that like has little Indian trends to it in the packaging. In our story is more on the lines of restaurant quality. That's for our brand specifically. Like, we're showing that this was our restaurant recipes, and this is more so. There's other brands that are, this is my mom's recipe. Ours is more focused on like, yeah, this is the restaurant quality food that we're able to bring you to enjoy whenever you want at home. But the culture itself, we haven't really pushed heavy on the culture part. We have, you use the word Americanized. I think I was born and raised here, so I don't have that. I don't have that intense tie to India. But because again, you get good Indian food here. The UK is somewhere where I still go for get ideas there, because they're light years ahead of us when it comes to Indian food, from the restaurants as well as in the supermarkets, or it's just a regular part of their diet.
Yeah.
So I go get ideas.
And
I'm glad that's what's happening over here, where Indian food is now becoming a regular part. Maybe you'll have it once a week. Maybe it becomes part of the, and again, I go back again to college campuses, and college campuses now have Indian food. I mean, when I was in college, vegetarians didn't have, I wasn't vegetarian, but like vegetarians didn't have much option other than pizza and pasta. Now Indian food is a big element to hit those things.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, Quench, you know, is our food and beverage CPG company. And for like 16 years now, we've been doing food trends. You know, how do you track trends, and what trends in global or ethnic cuisines are you most excited about right now? Because I'll tell you, this year in our trends report, we had all these like more quote unquote world flavors that were coming to fruition that were like the speed of the internet, right? They were coming, people were trying them. They were like sought after, and it was crazy. Some of them I had never even heard of at all. Like, I had to like look up the pronunciation. That's how foreign they were to me. But I mean, it's a time that I think that is really, really accepting, and really it's a trend. It's a, these flavors are a trend. And so how do you track them, and like what trends and, you know, what trends in the cuisine are most exciting to you right now?
Yeah, we do a decent job of reading and like just about the trends, like the different publications, like you mentioned, like and always reading, right? Following the trends. I have my R&D team always visiting different places as they can, go to stores, see what's out there, see what's out there in restaurants, see what's out there in grocery, and that we can bring into prepared foods and things like that. Indian food is always, like, they always talk about it, different parts of Indian food is a trend, right? And spice is always a trend. Now, now you're seeing trends, like you're saying, like Filipino food is a trend, right? Things like that. And we do product extensions outside of Indian. We are also starting our own Latin line coming up.
Oh, great.
Things like that. So it's under a different brand name called Cantina Latina. So it's like we are doing other than Indian, following trends. So we have the capability at being our, doing our own production. We have the capability to try things where when you are using co-packers, it's a little harder.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's tough when you're, you know, and it's funny because I with Quench, we deal with a lot of companies, right? And it's like, I always feel like there's companies out there that have a brand, a well-known brand, and they use a co-packer. And boy, they really want to have their own factory. But then you have all these co-mans that we know that are making brands, and all they want is their own brand because they feel like it's all, everyone feels the grass is greener. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, you got the brands.
I'm trying to do both, right? I'm trying to do a little bit of everything because I'm not an, I want to start brands. I love brands. I love that part of the business. So I love building brands. And they're expensive. It's expensive to build a brand. Also expensive to build a plant. I need to keep, you need the business to keep the plant going too.
That's
so
right.
It's a little bit of both. And that's why the like-minded partners is very important to me. Like my father and like my board, my strategic partners, we're all on the same page, like just grow and growth across all these channels and have different business leaders to grow all of them. I'm not there yet. Right now, I have the same business leaders, but as we get there. But my goal is eventually to have different business leaders to build each aspect of the business. Building a brand is not cheap. Going back to that, like right, I mean, there's you need to promote it. You need to fund it properly. It's not easy. A lot of money goes into, I don't know what AI is going to do to it, but like make it easier or harder. But you need to, the product development side of things, the tasting, like I was saying, like getting those, you need getting the flavors right. So we're excited to bring this new Latin brand, Cantina Latina. And again, just like Cafe Spice, Cafe Spice is a brand name which has, can be Indian, right? But can also be other flavors. We're focusing more on the spice trail. So there'll be Thai cuisine, other Latin, like under Cafe Spice. Cantina Latina, I'm not segmenting, even though the first four items we're doing are Mexican burrito bowls, they're not, but I'm not segmenting it just to Mexican. There will be other aspects of Latin cuisine that'll be part of it.
Very cool.
So building brands is fun, but it takes a toll.
You bring a very good, very, very astute point, and it's that building brands is not cheap and not easy. And I think everyone, but people that have manufacturing, again, the grass is greener. They see these brands and the brands, they command a premium and, you know, it feels real successful because no one sees the turmoil, the expense, the roughness, the shelf space. They don't see all the other battles you're doing out there. They just see, oh, look at that brand. It's making all the money and we're making that product for them. It's an endeavor. I had to talk to a lot of folks. I talked to a lot of people in the beginning and say, hey, we want to create a brand. It's like, well, you know, as much as we want to do the work, I love it. I mean, I was talking to someone today about new naming, new packaging, new products, new website, new everything, exciting stuff. But, there's an expense to it, you know, and it's not just the agency side. There's an expense all the way across the board. So it's not for the faint of heart.
But you be loyal to your brand, right? And I learned that at an early age, be loyal to your brand. Don't like build your brand architecture, use a company like you guys, you know, to build all of that.
Yeah.
And like we had to change our logo, right? Once along the way, like we had a very Indian logo.
It was
the font from the restaurant. It was like that Indian Sanskrit type logo. And then when I wanted to go to other cuisines, we changed the logo. We kept little elements of it, like the like the flowers and stuff like that. But we changed away from that very Indian look.
Yeah. And that's just it. You gotta hit that sweet spot because, you know, you need to, yeah.
I forgot to mention this earlier when you're saying that, you know, it's also the naming of the dishes, right?
And like, sure.
Like people know chicken tikka masala now. People know like some of those dishes they know. It's like general mm-hmm. sauce chicken like type of stuff.
Right.
But like when we launched alu gobi, which is potatoes and cauliflower, it was mm-hmm. a flop. Like we weren't selling it. Mm-hmm. We changed the name from alu gobi to cauliflower and curried cauliflower and potatoes.
Done.
And sales doubled.
Yeah.
people know what it is.
Yeah.
Also happens like we do a butter chicken meatball. People love meatballs. Like yeah. It's a kofta. It's a gluten-free meatball, but it's actually a kofta, but we call it butter chicken meatballs.
Yeah. People know what they're getting. It makes it easier. And if you put the spice in front of it, it's like you can put any spice in front of like say meatball. People are like, I like meatballs. Spice. I like spice. I'll try it. Right. Like you gotta lead the horse to water a little bit. You know, you can't make them drink always, but you just got to give them those cues. And it's funny because that was even a food trend for a while. It was just, you know, Himalayan sea salt. Like I didn't know that's where the sea salt came from, but somehow I need to have it from the Himalayas. That's a better sea salt, right? Like, you know, that's just marketing. And we're attracted to brands and we love that story behind it.
But we did have a flop. Like, you know, we tried to carry the ghee trend, right? Everybody's talking about ghee.
Yeah.
And the keto and all that kind of stuff. Yep. And we launched a ghee roasted chicken and nobody really knew what ghee roasted chicken was. Maybe it was in the messaging. Maybe it was, but that was like an item that never really got anywhere.
Yeah, that's funny. And hey, that's like to your point. Sometimes that just doesn't work. Are there technologies or innovations in production and food production that you're looking at right now?
Yeah, we're, you know, the new plant is all about tech. It's all about efficiency through tech, automation, but like automation, but still like, we haven't reduced jobs. Like we got mm-hmm. we work with a company called Chef Robotics. We've put in these robotic arms that are doing the filling of the trays. It's giving us a much better feel about what's happening on when we're doing the packaging, like those everyday jobs, and increase the output. We have, like as it goes into the spiral chiller, is able to check, like we're checking mm-hmm. weights and measures as it goes along. So we're giving away less. Mm-hmm. And it's really, we've got eight now, we just ordered another eight. So it's like, it's really working. It's called, Chef Robotics, and they're robots for hire. So it's not like the capital cost is so crazy. We're able to test it out and make sure it works. A lot of 3D printing involved and different tools that we use. We work with a company called Blendtec that does our cookers, and they use a lot of cooker cloud software. So we're seeing how much yield we're losing. It's all in the cloud. We're getting,
wow.
So now we have all this data. Now I want to figure out using all of this data to make our, so now we're a manufacturer, a food manufacturer, but being and focused on efficiency, but also what do we do with that information as we grow?
Well, you know, it's funny, like we have a, we have a company called Wildfig that has data analysts on board, data scientists, and we started that company and we kept it separate. I was going to bake it into one of the agencies and it was an internal debate and I lost the debate and I'm glad I did because we kept it separate because the thought was, would people really come for data analysis to an advertising agency? You know, they were supposed to be the wild creative guys, but they're going to really trust it. So we have these really smart people that are data scientists in the company. So we created a separate company called Wildfig. They sat on the side separately. I assumed that they would be doing, helping us with marketing and the data revolving around marketing. The first project they were working on was really a supply chain management for a food manufacturer, telling them what flavoring should be at what geographic area of the country, at what time, how much of it they should make, how much they shouldn't make. And really what we were trying to do is cut down on capital costs. And it made sense. It was truly like amazing. And
that is amazing. Wow. Love to learn more.
Yeah, it was cool. Like, and even from a like where to warehouse certain flavors, even in the United States, like where certain flavors would be more popular than others, you know, just saving on logistics. It was a lot of just simple things, but you know, as you know, everything you make, you're sitting on cash until it sells, right? So, you know,
we have the internal debate, and I'd love to see what you guys have about white meat versus dark meat.
Yeah,
chicken. It's like a a constant debate at our company. And it's like parts of the country only want to eat white meat, parts of people want to eat dark meat. But authenticity is dark meat. We feel like it's better for the flavor. It's like so much back and forth. I'd love to see what like data
with white meat. I'm sure there's ways of telling that. I mean, for sure. It's just crazy how that all like ties together. But if you obviously the more you figure out, the more nimble and more efficient you are.
Yeah.
So the food industry. Okay. So it's always evolving. You guys build these magnificent facilities. You bring robotics in. How do you stay nimble? It's a fast changing landscape. I mean, are you just always looking to see what's next out there and learning and how to be more efficient? I mean, what do you do to stay ahead of everything?
You visit shows, you see the trends when it comes, like we just won Processor of the Year with our new plant. Food engineering.
That's awesome. Magazine.
So it's like now all of a sudden everybody's showing us tech, right? They're like, oh yeah, you guys built this new plant. Let's look at this. That's what I was talking about, 3D printing of like parts. That's something that's insane. We never even imagined years ago.
Right.
So going to these seminars and going, I think we're going to do more of it. I'll have my COO visit more of these. Like, you know, last couple of years has been building a plant and ramping up a plant, but like now we need to be ahead of what's next. Mm-hmm. We've built our plant in phases. So the plan there, we are still like in the middle in between phase 1, phase 2, and most of it's just equipment, but we've built the infrastructure where all we need is just to add the equipment. Mm-hmm. And equipment's just getting more and more efficient, like you said, every day. And we need to just stay on top of it to make sure. So building a good process engineering team is going to be important for us for that.
So, I mean, on that note, do people ever come to you with a product idea and ask you to like turn it into a business, like the entrepreneurial side? Do you mentor people that way? Does that ever happen?
Sure, we're a co-packer, right? So obviously I'm getting a lot of introductions, but it's hard with my team, when we work with the team, because we need to quantify everything, right? We can't do the smaller stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. But as an entrepreneur and being a member of the Young Presidents Organization, it's an organization that we're both a part of, it's like there's people introducing me to people every day.
Yeah.
And like, oh, my friend make this sauce. Like you said, my mom has this sauce. I want to bring it to market. So you need to be able to like feed through mm-hmm. what's real and what's not. A lot of food brands are born in farmers markets. And a lot of them have started there, and like seeing what works is very important there. So I'll mentor people, whether I can do it myself, that's great. But otherwise I would guide them in other directions. There's other starter Indian brands who come to me too, because mm-hmm. Cafe Spice is available in many stores now. So they know the brand. Mm-hmm. They'll come to me for advice. Other food companies that have started that are in other parts of the store come to me and say, hey, should we get involved in the deli? Or do you think frozen is the way to go? I have my own thinking around that, and I would be happy to give anybody any advice on frozen versus fresh. But in general, I'm happy to mentor younger entrepreneurs, or sometimes not even younger. Sometimes it's somebody who's just starting a new business and they want to chat.
That's awesome.
My father did it. And I've kind of like going on with it. He said somebody gave him his break. He said when that gentleman passed away, he was my dad's guru. He said, well, how can I ever repay you for everything you've done for me? And he says, you know, just like I gave you advice as a young entrepreneur, mm-hmm. share your knowledge, give
that's
it
awesome.
People. And I've kind of like stick with that.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I had a young man reach out to me a week ago, and he just sent me this email out of the blue. I think it was on LinkedIn. He came through LinkedIn. He's like, look, I've been following your career, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm just starting out. You know, I know you're busy. Would you talk? I said, sure, I'll talk to you. So I talked to him. I said, hey, let's have lunch. I said, I'll talk to you. We can have lunch, you know, quarterly. I'll be happy to teach you and help you. And, you know, maybe you'll run me out of business one day, but
that's fine, right?
I mean, that's good.
Day, it's fine.
That's great.
You're not run me out of business, but like, you know, in the gist of it, competition is healthy, but I'm happy to advise anybody. It hurts if they like don't feel the same from the other side or something mm-hmm. like that. But at the end of the day, if you can help one person, why not? Right?
Oh, no doubt. And I was more than happy to help this gentleman and I meant what I said. I'm going to meet him for lunch and we'll continue an ongoing conversation. So that's good stuff. If you had to give one piece of advice to someone starting a food brand today, and that's a big general question, but what would it be?
Yeah, I you know, surround yourself with like-minded people is important, right? But also fill the gaps that you don't have, right? Like we were, right. like I mentioned earlier, is like-minded people when it comes to the growth and the end picture, right? But at the end of the day, food safety is not my specialty. Bring in the team that has the food safety.
Right.
You know, the finance might be somebody else's specialty. Bring in the team. Surround yourself with people who can really have the common vision but can complement your vision. Not just yes men. Not just mm-hmm. We'll do whatever you want. No. We need people who will push us. And as an entrepreneur, I have a great vision, but not everything works, right? Not everything's a great idea. And you have enough false starts. So you need to be able to have that team that pushes you to the limit. So surround yourself by those people.
That's awesome. You know, you were talking to earlier, you mentioned like concepts starting in a farmer's market. We were very fortunate. I was fortunate a long time ago in my career. I got to work with Ann Byler, and you know, it's Annie Ann's Pretzels. And yeah. She literally was a woman who would make pretzels at a farmer's market, and you know, and then went global basically. I mean, every airport, every, you know, mall, every, you know, they were everywhere. And it was as simple as, when I say simple, I mean, the concept was as simple as that. I'm sure the infrastructure and to go global.
The grind is real.
But I mean, it was such a very simple concept. She stayed true to it and made it the same way and was able to replicate it and obviously did quite well. But, you know, the other thing too, I'd say if someone asked me about that advice and the manufacturing, everything you said is obviously spot on. I also think it's great to have a story. You know, like you have one with your family, the culture, it's real. It's not like you're not some guy that just decided to make this. You didn't invent it.
Right? As we're growing, that's important. Like, you know,
it's real important.
Like when we went national with Whole Foods, like the local regional Whole Foods knows us. Like me and my wife were in every store. They have like since we started the business. But now all of a sudden you're in California. Nobody knows who you are.
That's right.
Getting that story across is so hard and so like important though. Like, you know, like it's great. That's why something like this is so nice.
That's right. I mean, we talked earlier. It's like, look, this is the age old thing. And again, I'm all about advertising and marketing. That's what we do, but you got to get the product in people's mouths. If you don't make a great product, it doesn't matter how great the advertising is. They're not going to buy it twice. So the people got to taste it. You got to get in their mouths, but you got to get noticed. In order to get noticed, you have to have a good, you know, you have great photography, all that stuff, but you have to have a great story. And it's just, you got to engage people. So I think it's super.
And then get that story out and then use a way to get it out there.
That's right. All right. So I got one last question I ask this of every one of my guests. And thank you. You've been phenomenal. I could talk to you for hours. You're so easy to talk to. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why? And it can't be your food.
Can't be my food.
Right? No, no.
I'm a big pizza guy. You know, it's like I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah, New Yorker.
I grew up on pizza. It's my comfort food. You see all these trends with this, with the pizza, one bite pizza everywhere going around the city and trying all the different pizzas. But the town I grew up in, Irvington, New York, that Irvington pizza is still like, that's my
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of grow up when you find that when you grow up on, it's like nothing's as good, right? It's just, and you know, it is terrible. Nothing is about me search, but my wife and I stopped at a place, and I won't mention names. We stopped at a pizza place locally to where we live. And you're right. There's nothing better than New York pizza. And I'm a Philly guy. New York pizza is the best. You know, it just is. And, you know, around where we live, it's like, nah, we stopped and, you know, I don't want to eat. I could eat a whole pizza myself anytime. I try not to because I'd be five times the size. But it's like when I do eat pizza, I want it to be phenomenal. I want it to be an event. I want it to be the pizza. We have a tough time in our area. There's one place, two places now we found that are decent, but still nothing compares to a New York pizza. It just doesn't.
Yeah, New York and people are trying to replicate it everywhere in the world, but something
trying to recreate the water. Yeah. But somehow it's just something phenomenal about it. And anyway, that's a great answer. So, well, hey, Samir, thank you so much for your time. Like I said, I could talk to you for an hour, but you've been fantastic.
This has been great. Thank you so much, Michael. I'm really glad we did it. Look forward to hearing feedback from everyone on this.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we'll definitely keep it going. So thanks.
Thank you so much.